Well, good morning, and welcome to church. Whether you're gathering with us right now online, or you braved some really foul weather to gather with us in person, I'm glad you're here. Because I think I can help you avoid a costly mistake. How, you ask? Well, I think I found the answer to that question in a story taken from the life of David that's found in the Old Testament book of 2 Samuel chapter 6. And in just a moment, I'm going to tell you the story. But before I do, why don't you whisper this simple prayer in your heart and mind? God, speak to me. While Ronnie's preaching, I need to hear your voice. So will you speak to me and speak clearly? Amen. Last couple of weeks, we've been looking on as King David led the nation of Israel flawlessly. Every decision he made was a good one. Every action he took was the right one. I guess we could say, oh, David was on a roll. Well, he has this idea. He wants to bring the Ark of God, otherwise known as the Ark of the Covenant, to Jerusalem. Now, this should raise a couple of questions. Question number one, what is the Ark of God? It was a sacred piece of furniture. A chest, I guess you could say, made of acacia wood and gold. It was housed in the portable Jewish place of worship called the Tabernacle, specifically in a little room called the Most Holy Place. And when a priest would go into the holy place, God would manifest his presence above this chest in the form of a cloud. And then he would speak to the priest, giving words of encouragement or instruction or leadership to the nation of Israel. So this ark became symbolic of the presence, power, and leadership of God. And David wants to bring it to Jerusalem. Next question. Why wasn't it already in David's possession? Well, sometime back, I don't know exactly how long. I'll tell you the way the Bible states it. A long time ago, in a battle with the Philistines captured the ark. Being pagans, they tried to make a god out of it. And how did God respond to that? He didn't much like it. And if you remember back in the spring, I preached a two-part sermon entitled Hemorrhoids and Rats. And so when these Philistines tried to make a god out of it, God sent a plague of hemorrhoids and rats on them until they got rid of it. And they put the ark on a new cart, led along by a team of oxen, and it was carried back into Israel. And it ended up in a little village called Kiriath Jearim. And there a man named Abinadab and his sons became the caretakers of the Ark of God. So I don't know how, listen, it stayed there all the way through Saul's reign. He never saw the need to go back and get it. But now David wants it back. Why? I think there were two reasons. Reason number one, Jerusalem had become the political center of Israel. David wants it to become the religious center of Israel. But I think there's another reason that I really admire about David. He wanted the ark to serve as a visual reminder to all of Israel that though you call me king, God is actually king over us. So David goes to his political leaders, he went to his military leaders, and he told them about his idea, and to the man they said, that's the right thing to do. So then he calls a big meeting, and Israelites, just scores of Israelites show up, and he talked to his subjects, and he told them what he had on his mind, and to the person they said, that's the right thing to do. And so David put together an army of 30,000 elite soldiers. And then he invited any Israelite that wanted to join them. Let's go to Kiriath Jearim and let's get the ark. And so they go to the home of Abinadab. And Abinadab gladly surrenders it over, I'm sure considering taking into consideration the common good, Scott. Yeah, take it. So they loaded it up on a new cart, pulled by a team of oxen, and they start to Jerusalem. Now, in front of this ark, you got King David. You got all these people. They're playing all kinds of instruments. They're celebrating with all of their might. They're leaping. They're dancing. They're singing. You know, they're excited about this. Now, Abinadab had two boys, one named Ahio, who was out in front of this team of oxen, guiding them. And then on one side of this cart with the ark on it was the other son, Uzzah. Well, at some point, the ark hit a rough spot and slipped, and Uzzah instinctively reached over to stabilize the ark. And when he touched it, God killed him. You say, what? Wait a minute. I'm telling you, God killed him instantly, and he fell there beside the ark. Well, how do you think that impacted this celebration going on in front of the ark? Well, I'm going to tell you what, it was a wet blanket. It rained on their parade. All of a sudden, God's killed a man. You know how David responded? The Bible said he got angry. You know with whom? God. David couldn't understand why God would do something like that. He thought that was awful unfair of God. I mean, everybody agreed this was the right thing to do, and the poor old guy, all he was trying to do is keep the ark from falling on the ground, and you killed him? He got mad, and then he was very confused. He asked out loud in front of all the people, how am I supposed to ever bring the ark, you know, to Jerusalem if things like this, if God's going to keep doing things like this, how will I ever do it? Then he just threw his hands up and said, forget it. He took the ark to the home of a man named Obed-Edom, and he left it, and he went home. He and his soldiers and his people, they went back to Jerusalem and just said, forget it. Well, next thing you know, Bob, David begins to hear these stories of how God is blessing Obed-Edom and everything he owns because the ark is there. I mean, just out of the blue, Obed-Edom's truck just started getting better gas mileage. Huh? The mange on his dogs cleared up. All of his investments were skyrocketing. And every week, I believe somebody was telling David these stories. You wouldn't believe how God is blessing that man and his household. For 3 months, he listened to these stories and he made a decision. I'm going back to get that thing. So he gets a group of people back together, and they go to Obed-Edom's home. And this time, a Levitical priest carried it all the way to Jerusalem. This time, they succeeded in getting the ark where David wanted it to be. Now, Ronnie, what did you want to see in it? What did you want to see in that story? First effort failed, right? Second effort succeeded. What made the difference? Now listen carefully. What made the difference between a costly failure and success? To answer that question, we've got to read a verse from 1 Chronicles chapter 15, verse 2. And 1 Chronicles 15 is a parallel passage to 2 Samuel chapter 6, which means it's just the same story being told in two different books of the Bible. Look what happened. Just before they go back to try to bring the ark back for the second time, look what David said to him. Verse number 2, then he commanded, this is David, no one except the Levites may carry the ark of God. The Lord has chosen them to carry the ark of the Lord and to serve him forever. Now, okay, you see what he's saying? He's saying, everybody clear back, clear away from the ark. Only these Levitical priests
are going to carry it. Where's he getting that? Where'd this command come from? Oh, David had been reading the Bible. In Exodus chapter 25, verse 12 through 15, and Numbers chapter 4, verses 4 through 15, God outlined in very specific, clear terms how the ark was to be moved. Now get this. God had already explained how, very specifically, this is how it's going to be moved. Number one, it's got to be carried. It's got to be carried with sacred carrying poles. Poles made of acacia wood overlaid in gold that were set aside for the specific purpose of moving the ark. Got to use those. Got to be carried. God said only Levites, only Levitical priests can carry it. And out of all the Levites, there's got to be one sect of Levites called the Kohathites. They're the guys who've got to move it. So you with me? So David's getting all this out of the Bible. And then at the end of Numbers chapter 4, verse 15, God said this, anyone who touches the ark with their hand, showing disrespect, I'll kill him. I'll kill him on the spot. So David's been reading the Bible. And as he read the Bible, he recognized what had gone wrong on the first attempt. I want us to read First Chronicles chapter 15, verse 13. Look what he said. Because you Levites did not carry the ark the first time, the anger of the Lord our God burst out against us. We failed to ask God how to move it properly. I want to read that verse from a paraphrase entitled The Message. In The Message, that verse reads like this. David said, the first time we did this, you Levites did not carry it properly. And God exploded in anger at us because we didn't, two key words, make proper preparation and follow instructions. David said, you know what led to that costly mistake? The first time we tried this, we didn't follow instructions. Okay. What's the moral of this story? What's our lesson we're going to take home with us? Failure to read and follow God's instructions will be costly. I like to hunt. I hope that doesn't offend anybody. If it'll make you feel better, I kill a lot more time than anything else when I'm hunting. But as a hunter, there are two things I got to have. I got to have tree stands, and I got to have firearms. Now, every tree stand I ever bought, every firearm I ever bought came with an instruction manual. And when you open that instruction manual, right there on the first page, in big red letters is a warning. It says this, failure to read and follow these instructions may result in serious injury or death. You know what I think would be a good idea for us today? On our way home, just on the way home from church. Maybe we all need to stop at the dollar store and buy ourselves a red Sharpie. Go home and sit down with our Bible and find the first blank page and write in big, bold, red letters, failure to read and follow these instructions may result in serious injury or death. I know what somebody just thought. You're just kind of being a little dramatic in that statement, Ronnie. Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions. Has anyone ever seriously injured you emotionally because they refused to read and follow these instructions? Or vice versa? Have you ever seriously injured another human being emotionally because you didn't read and follow the instructions in this book? Have you ever known of anyone whose reputation was seriously injured because they didn't read and apply the principles of the Bible? Are you aware of any relationships that were seriously injured because someone
didn't take the time to read this book and apply its teachings? Are you aware of any marriages that died because one spouse or the other, or maybe both, refused to base their actions on what this book taught? You aware of any dead churches? What do you think killed them? At some point, they decided, we're not going to read and follow the guidelines laid out in this book. I got to tell you something. I feel pretty confident in my statement. Failure to read and follow the instructions in the Bible may result in serious injury or death. I'm confident in this next statement. Failure to read and follow God's instructions will be costly. Psalm 1, you can read it this afternoon. God makes us a promise. He said, for everyone who will take the time to read and reflect on my word and put its teachings into practice, I'm going to promise you something. I'm going to promise you blessings. I'm going to promise you progress. And he's talking about spiritual growth. And I'm going to promise you success. And I'm going to promise you happiness. I'll give you these four things if you'll read, reflect on, and apply what you learn in my book. So what if we don't? You know what it cost us? Instead of blessings, there are problems. Instead of progress, there's setbacks. Instead of success, there's failure. Instead of happiness, there's depression. Failure to read and follow God's instructions will be costly. So what do we do? In light of that, what do we do? Here's what I'm suggesting. Let's read and follow God's instructions first. Oh, David got around to this. He got around to this when? After he made a costly mistake. Why didn't he go to it first? I believe he based his actions on some of the same things we base our actions on. I believe, first of all, David based his actions on an assumption. You know what I believe he assumed? It doesn't matter how we move the ark. This is not a big deal. Not even to God. Boy, was his assumption wrong. I think secondly, he based his actions on a bad example. When God hammered the Philistines and they said, we got to get rid of this ark, how did they do it? They put it on a new cart led by a team of oxen. So you understand that idea didn't originate with David. You know what David did? David consulted the example of the ungodly, people who didn't know or belong to God, and said, I'll do it the way they did. Huh? Bad choice. Bad decision. I think thirdly, David chose or based his decision on ease. Which would have been easier, to carry that thing? Now listen, it's overlaid in gold, and part of it was solid gold. It was heavy, and they had about 10 miles to cover. Wouldn't it have been much easier just to put it on a cart and let the oxen do it? And while we're talking about it, let me just throw Uzzah in. Why did Uzzah reach up and grab the ark? It was instinct. He just did what was natural. When you and I base our decisions on assumptions, God doesn't care. He doesn't care what I do here or how it's done. When we base our actions on bad examples, listen, all my unsaved friends and coworkers, they do this, and God hadn't struck them down. When we base our actions on what's the easiest thing for us to do or what's the natural thing to do, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll end up making costly decisions. You know where some of you are at right now? Some of you have been in the process of making a decision for some time. And you're kind of like David in the beginning. You've consulted everybody but God. You've run this idea by everybody. But you're yet to open up the Bible and find out if God has anything to say about this. See what that tells me? Now, you haven't acted yet. You've made your decision, but you just haven't taken action yet. You know what that tells me? You're on the eve
of making a costly mistake. And so God is allowing me to encourage you before you act. Take out this book and search it carefully and see if God has said anything about what you need to do and how you need to do it. Listen, if you go forward and make that costly mistake, you're going to end up just like David, mad at God, confused, frustrated. I don't want you to be in that shape. So here's what I'm suggesting. Read and follow God's instructions first. Let's pray together. Why don't you pray this little simple prayer to God? And say, God, thank you for the forewarning. I was about to make a big mistake. So help me now, God, to back up. Take my time. Open up your word. Read it carefully. And you lead me. You lead me and you show me exactly what I am to do. And God, you show me how I am to do it. And I'm going to follow your instructions. God, help us all learn to do that. We ask it in the name of Jesus. Thank you so much. I'll see you next time.